On Fridays, we love spending time with our political humorist and satirist, Bill Melberg, who also is an aerospace expert. And, Bill, it's always a pleasure talking to you. A little bit different of a program here this morning, but good morning to you from Chicago, my friend.
Well, hello, Stevie. Hello, Diane.
Hello.
And warm greetings to one and all, including my friend Colin McKellar in Sydney, Australia, who's listening to us on the Internet.
Nice.
Wow.
Greetings to all of you at the end of a very warm week. And, you know, I was just thinking that it's kind of hard to remember the scene outside my window just 6 months ago when we had that huge blizzard here in Chicago.
Yeah.
But as I sat here roasting in the summer heat this week, it was kind of scary to think that 6 months from now, I'll probably be looking at snowdrifts, icicles, and sub-zero temperatures once again. So,
Bill, what do you think Al Gore would say about something like this?
Well, he'd probably say, whether it's hot or cold, dry or wet, raining or snowing, it's all due to global warming. And if you don't believe me, buy my book and my DVD.
Well, Al, I mean, Bill, as you know, the Space Shuttle Atlantis touched down yesterday, ending 30 years of space shuttle operations and 135 space shuttle flights. Now, last week, you promised to talk with us about what it all means and where America's space program goes from here. Now, this morning, I would like to ask you to take off your political humorist hat and put on your aerospace historian's cap, because, after all, you are the author of hundreds, and I mean hundreds of magazine articles and three books about aviation and space history, including an account of the Apollo program called Moon Missions, terrific book. Plus, I know that your dad worked on the space program, designing the first American cameras to land on the moon. That was your dad, Frank.
Yep.
And I know that,
now 91.
I know that 91 years old, and he was a guy that worked on American cameras. We had to figure out the thing wouldn't sink when you landed or something.
Right.
I know Dr. Harrison Schmitt, who was the first scientist, the last man to set foot on the moon. In fact, I know you were at his Apollo 17 launch in 1972, and that he was at the Atlantis launch 2 weeks ago. So given all of that,
he had the place that I had watching his launch.
No kidding. That's crazy. And how exciting was that? So given all of that, what were your thoughts as the curtain came down on the space shuttle program yesterday? Put it all into some sort of perspective for us.
Well, Stevie and Diane, watching Atlantis touch down on television yesterday morning, as so many people said, was a bittersweet experience, because first of all, I felt great pride for our country, great pride in the men and women who designed and built and flew and maintained NASA's space shuttles during the past 30 years. And the space shuttle was, as astronaut John Young said at the end of its first flight, a magnificent flying machine. Imagine a spacecraft the size of a small jumbo jet rocketed into Earth orbit, doing all sorts of things in space, from releasing satellites and planetary probes to servicing the Hubble Space Telescope and assembling the International Space Station, then flying back to Earth and landing on a runway just like an airliner. Now, that was the sweet part. But we won't be seeing anything like the space shuttle again, at least not anytime soon, and that is the bitter part, because the space shuttles could have kept flying for many more years, or at least until we have an American rocket and an American spaceship ready to replace them. So many people are now asking, and for good reason, why is President Obama shutting down NASA's human spaceflight program after leading the world for nearly 50 years?
All right, so why? Why is he shutting it down?
Well, Stevie, that's a good question. And while the president and his appointees at NASA headquarters have tried to provide some answers in recent weeks, none of them, at least not in my mind, have been very convincing. And Stevie, I should point out that the last landing of the space shuttle yesterday coincided, as I think you already know, with America's first landing on the moon 42 years ago. In fact, the original schedule called for Atlantis to touch down on Wednesday, July 20th, the same date Apollo 11 touched down on the moon. But NASA extended the mission by one day. And who knows, maybe someone at the White House or at NASA headquarters figured out that it might look bad to be ending the space shuttle program on the same date the Apollo program achieved President Kennedy's seemingly impossible goal of landing a man on the moon. Now, of course, that's just wild speculation on my part, and I'm not a conspiracy nut. There's no evidence to support what I just said. But it is true that the one event, Apollo 11, represented the bold vision of John Kennedy, and the other event, the premature retirement of the space shuttle fleet, represents, in my opinion, the myopic view of Barack Obama.
Myopic, nearsighted, right?
Right, although I prefer the British definition in this case, which is short-sighted. And, and I think President Obama really was showing his short-sightedness last year when he canceled the Constellation program.
What was that about, the Constellation program?
Well, Stevie, the Constellation program was designed to carry Americans back to the moon, this time to build a permanent research base on the lunar surface, sort of like what we have in Antarctica. And it was also designed to send crews and supplies to and from the International Space Station using a new NASA spaceship called Orion. Now, President Obama is right when he says that it was President Bush who decided to retire the space shuttle fleet. But that's only half the story, or half the truth. And here's the other half. The reason President Bush agreed to retire the space shuttle fleet was to make way for the new rockets that were going to be part of the new Constellation program.
Right.
Because
right.
NASA needed to modify those launch pads and facilities at the Kennedy Space Center to pave the way for the new rockets. When President Obama canceled the Constellation program, there was no longer any need to modify those facilities or to retire the space shuttles. But for whatever reason, President Obama decided to send them to museums anyhow, and I think that was a huge, as Donald Trump would say, mistake.
And now our astronauts are going to have to purchase seats aboard Russian rockets to get to the space station, most of which was built with American taxpayer dollars. Is that all right?
That's right. Stevie, moreover, thousands of highly skilled American space workers, as we're speaking right now, are losing their jobs and their livelihoods at a time when America is already in its worst economic slump since the Great Depression. And I know some of those workers, and they have no idea how they're going to earn a living or pay for their bills because there's no jobs for them elsewhere, at least none that make use of their unique talents and skills and experience. And I think that's a national tragedy. Meanwhile, because of President Obama's decision to cede our space leadership to Russia, American taxpayers will be creating shovel-ready jobs for Russian space workers. That makes absolutely no sense to me. And sadly, many, if not most, of our space workers will never return to the field, and their skills and knowledge lost forever. That, too, is a national tragedy. All because President Obama canceled the Constellation program, which President Bush had initiated and Congress had approved twice.
That's a Democratic Congress, too, by the way. Democratic Congress. A Democratic Congress.
Exactly. And all because President Obama's attitude toward the moon is, in effect, been there, done that, even though the Constellation program was going to be very different from Apollo, and going back to the moon was the first step on our way to Mars. But it seems Mr. Obama has no interest in exploring space or maintaining our hard-won space leadership.
And that raises an obvious question, why the moon?
Well, Stevie, you're not the first person to ask that question. In fact, President Kennedy asked it rhetorically in a speech he gave at Rice University in September 1962. And it was his justification for the Apollo program, one of his greatest speeches. I think we have a clip from that speech. So why don't we take a listen? And I might add it was a very hot day in Houston, as you'll hear Mr. Kennedy mention.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too. We shall send to the moon, 240,000 miles away, from the control station in Houston, a giant rocket more than 300 feet tall, the length of this football field, made of new metal alloys, some of which have not yet been invented, capable of standing heat and stresses, several times more than have ever been experienced, fitted together with a precision better than the finest watch, carrying all the equipment needed for propulsion, guidance, control, communications, food, and survival on an untried mission to an unknown celestial body, and then return it safely to Earth, re-entering the atmosphere at speeds of over 25,000 miles per hour, causing heat about half that on the temperature of the sun, almost as hot as it is here today, and do all this, and do all this, and do it right, and do it first, before this decade is out, then we must be bold.
Oh, man, Bill, we must be bold. My, was that leadership. That was inspiring stuff.
Mm-hmm. We must be bold, and I know we're short on time here, but I just think it's a pity that we haven't been back to the moon since Harrison Schmitt and Gene Cernan left the lunar surface 39 years ago. Imagine if Columbus had made his four trips to the New World and no one ever followed. Mm-hmm. As one historian said of Columbus, his claim to fame isn't that he got there first, it's that he stayed. Which, of course, the Vikings did not do when they reached the New World 500 years ahead of Columbus.
Yeah.
And being of Scandinavian descent myself, I'm sorry to say that. But I'm also sorry to say that America has not gone back to the moon since Apollo. And I'm even more sorry to say that President Obama has killed America's effort to go back to the moon when he canceled Constellation. And he's done even more damage ending the space shuttle program. In short, President Kennedy President Obama has ended President Kennedy's bold vision.
Discouraging. There's no question about it. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a look at who is planning to go to the moon. We're going to find out about some of the moon's resources and how one of those resources could provide a new and unlimited source of clean energy right here on Earth. And we'll be taking a look at our future in space. And we'll do that in just a couple of moments. Again, Bill Malberg is our guest. He's put on his aerospace historian hat, and he is one of the best when it comes to aerospace engineering and history. And it's a pleasure talking with him about the final flight of Atlantis and final space shuttle flight that landed yesterday. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. Wall Street Report next. I'm Stevie J at 93.5, 95.3, the new Connect FM. It's 8:48. All right, we are back with political satirist and aerospace historian Bill Malberg, and this morning Bill has put aside his humor for a day to talk about America's space program following the final flight of the space shuttle Atlantis, which landed back on Earth yesterday morning. And Bill, we're going to spend our last few minutes talking about our future in space, but first let's take another quick trip as we listen again to some of these great clips and cuts that we really sometimes forget about. The Kennedy, I just forgot all about this. But let's take another quick trip into the past as we listen to the historic words of Neil Armstrong as he took those incredible steps. And I'll never forget, I was at my grandma's house watching from her couch and wondering what it all meant. And it was an amazing, amazing, amazing thing to see and watch as this was unfolding. And it was that 20th of July. Again, I'll never forget that moment. But here it is again.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Wow. All right, that's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. Bill, what do you think as you hear those famous words?
Stevie, I think about how different things might have been had that first step on another world been taken by a man named Alexei Leonov from Siberia rather than by Neil Armstrong from Ohio. And had things worked out a little differently, Soviet cosmonaut Alexei Leonov might have been the first man to set foot on the moon. And I think about how different our image of that epic achievement might have been if the first flag raised on the moon had been the hammer and sickle rather than the stars and stripes.
Well,
and I also think about the next person to step on the moon and the next flag to be planted there. Will it be someone with a Chinese name? Will the flag be a red banner? And what will it say about the United States if our leadership in space is lost to the People's Republic of China?
Is China planning to send people to the moon?
Stevie, they say they are. And thus far, the Chinese have done everything they've said that they're going to do in space. In fact, next year, they're planning to send their first automated lunar rover to the moon, and I'm sure they will.
What is China's interest in the moon, Bill?
Stevie, their interest is the one we ought to have, and which we discovered as a result of the Apollo program. You see, scientists have found that the lunar soil contains a rare isotope of helium called helium-3. Rare on Earth, that is, but plentiful on the moon. And helium-3 would make the perfect fuel for fusion reactors, providing clean, safe power for billions of people around the globe and for 1 billion people in China, where a growing economy is increasing the demand for energy and driving up the price of oil.
So the Chinese are interested in going to the moon to mine helium-3 for fusion power plants here on Earth?
Well, they say they're interested in the moon for that reason, and so do the Russians and the Indians and the Japanese, but not Barack Obama. He says, been there, done that, and he's wrong.
Any other resources on the moon that we could use?
Well, at about the same time President Obama was killing America's return to the moon, scientists were announcing the discovery of large amounts of water ice at the moon's North Pole and in the South Pole. And that ice could provide water, oxygen, and rocket fuel for future explorers and colonists on the moon, and it would also be very useful for sending astronauts to Mars and beyond. And that's why former astronauts like Neil Armstrong and Harrison Schmitt believe America ought to be going back to the moon, and it's why so many other former astronauts and NASA managers have told President Obama that he's put America's space program on the wrong course. Or as astronaut Gene Cernan from Apollo 17 describes it, a mission to nowhere. That's what NASA's doing today.
A mission to nowhere. I want to thank you for this look at America's space program, Bill Melberg, past, present, and future. I'm glad that our audience had a chance to hear the other Bill Melberg this morning. But I tell you what, I know very little about all this, and I'm very down about this. Mm-hmm. I'm very sad this is happening.
Well, you know, it's just one more example of this president not believing in American exceptionalism and not thinking that we should, you know, be a leader in the world. And I think that's a big mistake because that's not what made this country great.
Well, you're correct, my friend. I appreciate your time and talent. We'll be back to our political humor next Friday, but thank you so much for the history, and thank you so much.
We'll have the laughs back next week.
Yeah, very important stuff, though, because we have a lot of questions, and you answered a whole bunch of them. Thank you so much again, Bill.
All right, thank you, Diane, for the clips.
All right, no problem.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Diane Ducey. Always a pleasure. Thank you. I'll be seeing you on Monday on the radio.
Yeah, enjoy the day.
Yeah, will indeed. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I am Stevie J. Stand by. We've got a lot coming up your way next. Don't go away. It's Tay and Jay later today from the Champaign County Fairgrounds. Don't miss that exciting broadcast. Patty and Linda are next. Mary Lynn and Diane after that. Cardinals, big weekend for the St. Louis Cardinals. Let me tell you, they go to Pittsburgh, and this is big. They've got to try and take care of those Pirates in Pittsburgh. The Pirates are in first place. That can't happen. But the Pirates are indeed in first place. Are you kidding me? That's crazy. Let's take care of them, Cardinals. I'm Stevie J. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in.
Did you know that your computer doubles as a radio? Bookmark myconnectfm.com, where you can click to listen live.